Before I start this episode, I need to say that I'm not using my mic. I was not able to today. I had to record some of it in my car. Sorry about the audio. It's not the best. I'm sorry. It's just a bonus episode that I need to get out. Next week, we continue with Rigo Miller. Hope you enjoy. Make sure you like all of our social media. And hope you enjoy. Welcome to The Truth Lies Between, case number 2 on Jessica Van Zandt Dietzel. And this is going to be a bonus episode. The rest of the episodes will have myself and Leah on them, as the last few have been. She just knows everything about the case, and I just find it better when we're working together. She has nothing to do with this episode, as does anybody. I've been sent some information, and I'm just looking into it. Is there a connection to Jessica? Possibly. I don't know. I just did not want to have no episode. And this case also takes place in Albany, Georgia. So you're going to have that. Now, make sure that you follow us on all social media. We're on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Facebook and YouTube, you can just type in our Missing Person Cases Network. If you're on Twitter, it's the _MPC Network. Instagram, it's Missing_Persons_Network. And we're going to be creating a Patreon account specifically for this podcast. As time goes on, we'll be taking on other cases, but because it's so in-depth, we can really only do one case at a time. My next project is on a wanted man who murdered his girlfriend and her son, but we're not going to talk about that now. Like I said, this is a bonus episode, and it involves a woman named Natalie Epler, who reportedly murdered herself, suicide, they say. So we're going to get into that, and I hope you guys enjoy. If you have any comments or questions, feel free to put them in the whichever platform you are right there in the thread where you can comment. Make sure you like it and share it if you can, and if you're on YouTube, make sure you subscribe. Facebook, make sure you like. And without saying any more, I'm going to get into it. Hope you enjoy. First, I'd like to start out by saying that I unknowingly already knew about this case. I watched it when it was on one of the specials. I forget if it was Dateline, 48 Hours Mystery. It was one of them. I remember watching it, though, because I just did not think that it was a suicide. After learning more about it, I still do not think that it was a suicide, but it may have been. Just their reasoning is not enough for me to say, yeah. Simply, someone being very intoxicated. You know how many people get very intoxicated all the time, get into arguments? They don't kill themselves. And the gunpowder. So now, Mr. Epler, he was a trained Marine. So he would know what to do to make it look like a homicide. I'm not saying that's what happened, but obviously if the police on scene came to that conclusion right away, many others must feel that way. But where I'm going to start is I'm going to read this article that was sent to me. And, you know, this is how it really all got started. And I'll go into why they sent it. It was an anonymous source. And what else they said. Okay. And I'm going to read an article from Atlanta News Now, AJC. 7 years after Albany woman's death, ruled suicide, family isn't convinced. And it doesn't seem like many are, including this paper. As they've stated, a cold case is a criminal investigation where all leads have been exhausted and the case remains unsolved. This story is one in an occasional series on unsolved homicides and missing person cases from around the state. To read more cold cases, go to myajc.com/cold cases. Now, why would a newspaper take the liberty of calling something a cold case when it has been listed and filed as a suicide? I mean, that's got to tell you something, right? That not many people believe that this was a suicide, you know, including myself and many others. So I'm going to get into the article now. And it says, in the early morning hours of February 20th, 2011, Albany police found 25-year-old Marine Sergeant James Epler on the floor of his bedroom, cradling his dying wife in his lap. Natalie Epler had been shot just above the right ear. The 23-year-old hospital secretary died an hour later at Phoebe Putney Memorial Hospital, the same facility where she worked. "She was the sunshine in every room," said Rebecca Holland, Natalie Epler's mother. Now, I tried to reach out to Rebecca, but I could not find her on Facebook. If she comes across this and she would like to speak with me, you can find me. Just go to Missing Person Cases Network and send a message and you'll get in touch with me. I'd like to ask you some questions if you're willing to talk. So Holland, who lives in Amherst, Ohio, said she still remembers the exact words spoken to her over the phone to deliver the news. "There's been an altercation. Your daughter has passed." Investigators know one thing for certain. Someone held a gun to Natalie Epler's head and pulled the trigger. But 7 years later, investigators still don't agree on who was holding the gun that killed her. Now, I must say, Natalie was a very pretty girl in these photos. James also looked much different back then. He looked like a real prototypical Marine, which is not a bad thing. He does not look like that these days from what I've seen on Facebook. But. So the husband became the primary suspect because it was a domestic dispute called that led police to Epler's front door that night. Now let me say something. Okay. The husband, the spouse, is always the number one suspect. Sometimes to a fault. Okay. Where that's all they hone in on and that's all they care about. Which sometimes allows a killer to get away and put somebody innocent in jail. I must say that. It is a huge bias that people always think it's them. And maybe that's in play here. Maybe it's not. So James Epler, who at the time worked at a Marine logistics base, told police he and his wife had been out drinking at a local bar earlier. When they arrived home, they began arguing over whether Natalie had been flirting with another man. Epler said his wife admitted during the argument that she had slept with his best friend. By the time the argument was over, Natalie Epler was on the floor shot. Now, let me just say something. Heated argument. You're both drunk. Your wife tells you she slept with your best friend. She ends up dead. Who did it, right? Why is she going to kill herself, right? Let me just keep going, okay? So James Epler said he found her that way. He told police investigators that after shattering a mirror with his fist during the argument, he went to the kitchen to wash his wounded hand. When he returned to the bedroom, Natalie was on the floor bleeding. Now, why? Why? I don't, like, so there's one thing that I've learned about missing person cases involving domestic disputes. Often, very often, one of the two people involved, the male or the female, or if it's male and male, female and female, quote unquote, walks away to cool off and is never seen again. And what that means in real life is that they were killed by their partner. This just makes no sense to me. So he was so mad that he punched a mirror, causing blood. And then he went to go, like, in the middle of the argument, he just decided to clean it. You know, his adrenaline was pumping. He did not need to cut that right away. I don't buy it. I'm sorry, but these are the facts. This is just my opinion. A lot of other people have the same opinion. Okay? A friend of his, James Talton Jones, was at the home that night, but he could neither confirm nor deny Epler's story. Jones told police he tried to break up the couple's argument and went outside, which is where he was when the shooting happened. Neither man reported hearing a gunshot. I find that particularly interesting, too. What Jones did next differs depending on who said what to the police. Jones himself said Epler came outside and called for his help. While Epler said he came outside and Jones forced him back inside at gunpoint. Now, let me just say something here. Why would Jones force him in at gunpoint if he didn't hear a gunshot to begin with? So he has no gunshot, so he doesn't know anything about her being dead. Yet he brings him back in at gunpoint. That, to me, that's a lie. An absolute lie. When police asked Epler why Jones would point a gun at his friend, Epler answered, "I don't know. Maybe he thought I shot my wife like everyone else." But how would he have thought you shot your wife, buddy, if, I don't know, he didn't hit the gun? That's a big part. Police arrested Epler on the scene, charging him with murder, aggravated assault, and possession of a firearm during the commission of a felony. He was booked into Daugherty County Jail to await indictment for a crime that would carry a life sentence if he were convicted. 3 months later, though, Holland, the victim's mother, received a shock in the mail. It was Natalie's death certificate, and there was a word written on it that she hadn't expected. It was marked suicide. No attempts to move away. While James Epler was still in jail on murder charges, an autopsy of his wife's body appeared to tell the same story he told police. Mary Ann Gaffney Kraft, a medical examiner for Daugherty County at the time, wrote in her autopsy report that the death was classified as a suicide. Gaffney Kraft didn't explain in the report what specifically led her to this conclusion, but she did note the presence of alcohol in Natalie Epler's body. The blood alcohol content was 0.203 at the time of her death, nearly three times George's legal driving limit. Now, if that's what you're... I mean, do you know how many people get that drunk every single day and don't kill themselves? Or you know, when people don't get that drunk and do kill themselves, that is not a reason for suicide. Being drunk? I mean, really? I'm not buying it. How could that even be a reason? That's so objective. Right? It's not a fact that drunk people at that three times drunk murder themselves in their bedroom. It's just preposterous. Months later, the Georgia Bureau of Investigations, the GBI, which had been called in to assist, came to the same conclusion and closed the case in May of 2011. Brian Smith, the lead GBI investigator on the case, determined it was more likely than not the victim died of a self-inflicted gunshot wound to the head. According to the GBI's case summary, which the AJC obtained from her family, Smith found the position of Natalie Epler's head particularly intriguing. The positioning of the victim's head related relative to the observed injuries suggests the victim made no attempts to move away from the weapon, which is commonly observed with victims shot by other persons, the summary read. The summary concluded that Agent Smith could not mathematically or physically exclude the possibility that someone else fired the weapon that shot the victim. But based on the factors like the flight path of the bullet and the victim's position in the room, Smith concluded it was unlikely the victim was shot by another person. Now, I would like to say something. Mr. Epler was a trained Marine. You don't think he knew this? And there's another important fact that we'll go into that I will expand on, okay? After James Epler had been in jail for 3 months, his charges were dropped and he was released. The only thing he had left of Natalie, he said, was a picture of her he kept in his wallet. Oh, he must have loved her so much, huh? The cycle of abuse. Epler's in-laws, though, they are not convinced Natalie took her own life. She was not suicidal. She was not depressed, Holland said. Natalie Epler's medical records show she had seen a therapist for acute stress disorder, a precursor to post-traumatic stress disorder, a year before she died. Holland said her daughter was taking the antidepressant Lexapro to cope with the stress of her marriage. Now, she was so stressed out in her marriage, she had to take medication for it. So it was rocky, right? This was not a good marriage. According to family members, the young couple's marriage was a rocky one. Just 2 months before she died, Natalie had returned to Georgia after a short separation from her husband. So they had just been separated, okay? It looked like she was heading in the direction of a divorce, Holland said. She lived at home with us in Ohio for a year, and he pleaded and begged. You know, the cycle of abuse. He coaxed her into going back to Georgia. This is very common among domestic abuse victims. Very, very common. Holland said she believes Natalie was planning to leave again that night she was fatally shot. Police found a partially packed suitcase in the hallway and her father's ashes in the trunk of her car. In an interview with authorities, Epler said he had cheated on his wife 5 times. And he admitted he had even tried to persuade Jones, his friend, who was there at night, to sleep with Natalie so he could, quote-unquote, discover the two of them and act and use infidelity as grounds for divorce. Now, how crazy is that? He wants a divorce so bad, he's trying to ask his friend to sleep with her. He didn't love her anymore. He was just trying to get out of the divorce scot-free. Court records also show that Natalie was arrested for simple battery in 2009 after a previous domestic dispute, but the charges were dismissed. For Natalie Apple's family, the circumstances of her death are too suspicious for suicide. A sentence at the very end of the GBI's investigation summary is of particular interest to them. It reads, should other scientific evidence, factual information, or reliable statements be discovered at some future time, these results will be reevaluated accordingly. To me, that means they believe something else may have happened. They just need the facts. Her family has spent the past 7 years trying to uncover that additional information. More likely than not. In their push for further investigation, Holland and her brother, Mark Byrd, have hired a number of forensic analysts over the years to review the case. One of those analysts, Cleveland-based forensic pathologist Frank P. Miller, told the family he couldn't say with certainty that the death was a homicide. However, he did say that the GBI's conclusion that it was more likely than not the victim died of self-inflicted gunshot wound was not definite enough. The probability standard of more likely than not is not appropriate for ruling a death a suicide, Miller wrote in a 2011 report. The classification of a death as a suicide has far-reaching consequences and should be determined to be a reasonable degree of medical uncertainty, just like a ruling of a homicide. Miller concluded that the manner of death ultimately couldn't be determined, although he said there are circumstantial facts that point to this as a domestic violence homicide during an attempt to leave a troubled marriage. Ross Gardner, a blood pattern analyst who rendered his own opinion of the evidence, came to a similar conclusion. Gardner criticized several of the GBI's conclusions, including the agency's interpretations of its own gunpowder residue testing and ballistics analysis. He did not respond to requests for permission to quote his report. And when the CBS true crime television show 48 Hours caught wind of the case in January 2012, it sent its own investigators to sift through the evidence. He also arrived at that same conclusion. And I did see this one. I remember watching it. And I remember thinking, oh boy, he is guilty. And like I said, that's just my opinion based on the facts. And that can be my opinion. Because everyone has a right to their opinion. The physical evidence does not prove homicide or suicide at this point in time until there was more concrete information. Despite the apparent of the evidence, Durden County District Attorney's Office remained unwilling for years to reopen the case. Natalie Apple's family said they received only silence from the DA, who was already being sued by James Epler for false arrest, false imprisonment, and being defamed. That lawsuit was eventually thrown out. Obviously, you can't sue a DA when there are facts there that would make it seem like you did kill your wife. You can't. The circumstances, it could go either way. There's no way you're going to win a lawsuit like that. As for the GBI, it did not reconsider its suicide ruling. The Bureau declined to comment for the story, and Agent Brian Smith did not respond to requests for an interview. A spokesman for the GBI, Bahan Rich, said his agency provided limited assistance in the investigation. So now, if they provided limited assistance, why are they making the final ruling? We were up against somebody, and we don't know who, said Bird, Natalie's uncle. You know what? It seems like that to me. GBI saying they had limited assistance, yet they made the final ruling? Once again, another cold case definition. Like above, like I read. Some family members took their frustrations further than others. Irene Wasling, one of Natalie's aunts, was convicted in 2012 of conspiracy to commit murder and sentenced to 3 years house arrest after attempting to hire someone to kill James Epler. So that's how much they believe that he did it. They wanted to kill him. Bird and Holland said they have no contact with her and have tried to file a restraining order against her. We're not going away. It wasn't until a Florida-based team of pro bono forensic investigators volunteered to conduct an independent review of the case in December 2014 that the DA appeared to take notice. The team's investigative lead declined to release their official results reached in October of 2016, but unlike previous reviews, this one prompted the DA to look into the case once again. Doherty County Assistant District Attorney Hal Morales spent more than a year interviewing GBI agents and Albany police officers about the Epler case. And for Holland and Bird, it seemed like a prosecution was on the horizon. So we left off at Holland, her mom, and Bird, her mother, her uncle, basically, thought that, you know, some type of prosecution was on the way. Holland said she was assigned a victim advocate and given a date on which the case would go to the grand jury, although Morales denied making this guarantee. In the end, though, his review led where every other official investigation had, back to suicide. He said he couldn't uncover any new information, and as for the report from Florida team, he said there was no new information on that either. Most of their questions were already evaluated and analyzed by the GBI. But they said they were of little assistance, so how are they evaluating and analyzing all this stuff? That's not little assistance, that's a lot of assistance. Which again resulted in no conclusive evidence that a crime was committed. The last detail was key. Not only could he not find grounds to rearrest James Epler, he said he couldn't prove that a crime had even been committed. And you know what? I'm sure that's the case. I'm sure they don't have the evidence needed, and that the evidence they do have can point either way. And because it can point either way, they know that's going to leave reasonable doubt.
So if they don't think they can win the case, they're not just going to take it to trial. That's why they need more info. It just seems like somebody's getting very, very lucky because they knew what to do. Not only did we not hit probable cause, we didn't hit the higher threshold, which is required for criminal prosecution, and that is, can we convict somebody based on evidence to get something determined beyond a reasonable doubt, like I just said. It's pretty funny I just said that, and then bam, they're talking about it too. You cannot say there is no reasonable doubt, right? Because it could go either way, because of the way it was set up, basically. And you know, he may not have done it. She may have killed herself. I just think that the probability of that is very low. Colin, though, said she won't give up. We're not going away. We're going to try everything we can. I cried myself to sleep. James Epler, now 32, this was in 2018, is remarried and out of the military. He has two children and works at a computer repair store. He said what happened to Natalie still haunts him. I cry myself to sleep most nights. I constantly ask myself, what if I could have done that night? What he could have done differently. I have two children now and still question myself that night. How could I have saved the love of my life? Well, the love of your life that you were trying to have your best friend have sex with so you can get divorced from her? Okay. Not everyone is as certain as Natalie Epler's family about what happened that fateful night. Some, like Kelly Tucker, who said she used to be James Epler's roommate, just want him to be able to move on with his life, Tucker said. She initially, one of the many who thought 100% that he did it. But she has since changed her mind after getting to know him better. Now my question is, when was she a roommate? Was she one of the five that he cheated on her with? How did she know him better? Explain that. What exactly is the reason why she doesn't think he did it? James is one of the most generous and kind-hearted people you'll ever have the chance of meeting, Tucker wrote in an email to the AGC. He's been dragged through hell and back over a woman's decision to end her own life. He's been judged by thousands who didn't know him, called many things other than his name, yet all by people who don't know him. You don't need to know somebody, though. You can know somebody who's an amazing person, right? And they can still kill somebody. Whoever that person presents to be to you, that doesn't mean that is the person. We each meet people at different stages in their life. Someone might meet me and think one thing, and someone may have met me at a different time in my life and think a completely opposite thing. That goes for many people, okay? Epler said accusations that he is guilty have become commonplace. He told the AJC he comes under attack by the media and his late wife's family at least once a year. But he said he feels the same heartache his former in-laws feel. As much as I would love to take their pain away, I will always be blamed. Now, what is the significance? Kelly Tucker. Kelly Tucker has been pretty active on Jessica's case. Now, I was minding my own business when I was sent this and sent... I was also told that Kelly had been saying bad things about Andy and Christina. That she was saying that Christina was getting high again. A lot of other things. I'm not going to get into all the details. And look, I'm not out to look for stuff on people that have nothing to do with anything. These things were sent to me. And I just thought that, just to be transparent, that I want to get it out there. I couldn't do an episode later this week. But it just brings up questions, okay? And then people were sending me this, something about the reason. And I'm not going to get into all that drama, because it's just drama, and it takes away from finding Jessica, okay? I also do not judge people on their past, as let me just let you know right now, I have a past of my own. I did some time in jail for trafficking Xanax. So I'm not perfect, not even close. But if there are fraud charges, you probably don't want that person handling money until it's been a little while and they have some time under their belt, okay? I'm hearing this and I'm hearing that, and I'm not going to get into details, but when money gets involved with advocating, it never ends good. Money cannot be your motive. And I must say, when I first started advocating, I was looking for ways where I'd be able to do it full time and somehow be able to support myself. And it's really hard. It's almost impossible. You know, I'm still in the process of doing that. I don't make any money doing this. I do this on my own time. Always have, always will. If at some point my following continues to grow and I'm able to, you know, live a comfortable life. Comfortable means just eating, a place to eat, sleep, and that's it. As long as I can travel to places to guide families. So what I've been doing since I started this in October of 2018 was just guiding families through the process, because nobody knows what to do when someone goes missing until they go missing. There are things you can do to have a better chance. Now, I try to cover mainly just the cases that have no attention, because the cases with attention, they don't need help. Our following has gotten bigger and bigger. Total following is going to be well over $100,000. 100,000 followers through all of our social media. I know just on Facebook, the page has over 80,000. And what that does is it allows people to share stories that they would not usually see. And my main focus was always addicts and mentally ill. And you may ask why. My father had a mental illness. He was still a very productive person his whole life, very successful. He was also an alcoholic. I have suffered with addiction in my own life. Okay, so I have a soft spot for addicts and mentally ill people. They're also on the lower fringes of life, lower socioeconomic status, so they're not really cared about much or very high up on the police and media's list of things to do. Okay, I'm not trying to bash anybody, okay? Number one, when I first started this, I thought that the police were always doing it wrong, and that's not the case. Many police stations, number one, they don't have the resources, they don't have the training, and they don't have the people to really work these missing cases, because they're not important as far as statistics go, okay? Murder, that's important. Other types of crime. If someone's just missing, they're just missing. You can have tons of missing people in your city, and it's not going to be considered a dangerous city. That's the difference. So now that I know this, specifically in this case, you have police officers on both ends of the spectrum. You have a Albany Police Department, which is what people are saying about them is what I usually see when I'm asked to help on a case, because if the case was going well, I wouldn't be asked to help on it, to help raise awareness, to help guide the family. Then you have the other end where you have all day from, what is that county? Lee? And then Doherty County. Both doing the most they can to help. And you do not see that. Usually you see one police department trying to push it to the next. Okay, so where am I going with this, you may be asking? Epler is comments quite a bit in the Fine JVD group. Okay. Is he connected? I highly doubt it. But at this point, anybody can be connected, okay? The thing I call into question is, why wasn't this disclosed? What are the reasonings that Kelly has for feeling that he's innocent? Because not many people do. That was the only person that really did. The cop. So law enforcement is not saying that they think he is innocent. What they're basically saying is that they can't bring charges, so they're going to rule a suicide unless new evidence comes out. Now, the main evidence for them ruling this, the way they ruled it, was gunpowder residue, which, if somebody shot her that close, they could have gotten gunpowder on both of them. Did they test him for gunpowder? That's my question. Also, he was, so once these charges were dropped, he was allowed to go back to active duty. Why is he now discharged? That's my other question. You know, what happened? Did it mess him up? I'm sure it might have, seeing that. Or doing that. We don't know. But what this did was it opened up a can of worms. People, like, I don't want to know anything about Kelly. I don't care. I care less about her. It's not about her. It's about Jessica. It's only about Jessica. That's it. So I'm thinking, why are people sending me this? And the reason they're sending me is because they feel like something else is going on. I guess there was some incident with Reese. Somebody made wreaths for free so that they could raise money for Jessica, and some people didn't get them. Upset they were, as they should be. I don't care if the wreaths were $2. You were told you were going to get something. You put money in thinking you were going to help, and then some people didn't get the wreaths. Supposedly some people got fake wreaths. And then there's other monies being called into question. I mean, I'm kind of speechless because I know how this can happen and how it can happen quickly and swing it out of control. Addicts can justify anything, right? So all that has to be done is, oh, I'm just taking this money here, I'm going to put it back, and then the next thing you know, it's gone. There's supposedly some monies that was donated for this and that, that people, you know, never got the item, never heard where it went, things like that. I know that money has been donated for Karen to come. I'm not sure what the status of that money is. To be an advocate, money cannot be the motive. Okay, the motive has to be to help the family, or to help find that person. Now, I'm sure it was started with good intentions. Some people are even asking me if maybe she's covering for somebody. That's why she's doing this. I don't know. I have no idea. I don't know. I've never had a conversation with her. I have nothing against her. I don't know her. This came to me, and I just had to be transparent with it. I didn't want to take the focus off Jessica, but I also didn't want to go a week without an episode. Like I said, all this came to me, all right? I didn't go looking for this. I don't do stuff like that. I don't even talk about people, period. I was messaged by a volunteer, asked to help. And then I spoke with her mother, and I could just, I have to say, I've worked quite a few cases. I've never seen a parent do what has been done by Christina. And it's remarkable. She is the lead. She was for, you know what I mean? Albany Police Department didn't want to do anything, so Christina said, hold my beer. And she, the amount of work that she has been done, she could work for the police department. It's organized. It's labeled. The interviews, pictures, everything. You name it, they have it. And I've got to look at a lot of it. And there's a lot there. And you're going to go back and forth on what you think happened. But there's always the possibility of a random act of violence. We know that Jessica was not living the best lifestyle when she went missing. Okay? She also wasn't someone walking the streets. But, as many know, a lot of people liked her. Males, a lot of really liked her a lot. So she could do as she pleased, right? It'd be easy for her to get money, basically. You know, was it some random act? Okay, I know that there's this connection. Supposedly, there's also a connection to her and the person who lawyered up. Now, I'm not going to go any further with this. You guys think, you know, people can keep sending me stuff if they want. For me, it's really just kind of looking a little bit deeper into James's background, but without solid evidence, I'm not going to make accusations against anyone. It just calls a lot into question. And what it really does is it puts the family in a really bad position. Kelly's helped this family, right? But one thing after another, all Christina wants is to find her baby. That is all. She doesn't give a crap what you think, I think, or anyone thinks. She just wants to know what happened to her and where she is. Now, we know there's a possibility that she's still alive and sex trafficking. She could be sex trafficked. That's a big possibility. You know, as I spoke with Leah about suspects, a Kenny man is almost off my list. I don't think he's involved. I think he may know what have happened. And honestly, lately I've been really leaning towards a random murder. I know there are other missing women very close proximity. I know there was a woman that was almost murdered, even though we know who that person was, who kidnapped her. There are other women missing, women turning up dead. Is there a serial killer in Albany? Somebody who killed in the past and loved it, right? That's what a serial killer is. So I'm going to end this episode on that. Let me know what you guys think about that case. Now, I must say, there's not enough evidence to say 100% either way, homicide or suicide. You have to take your best educated guess, okay? I know things are going to be changing with the groups and whatnot. It has to be done because the drama that's going to come from this is not going to be good. I've been involved with cases where this happens and all the focus comes off Jessica. So this is the only episode that will not be on Jessica. It'll be on what I said it was on. And next week we pick back up with the suspects. So I hope you guys enjoyed. Make sure you like and share. Give us a follow, subscribe. You know the deal. Also, sorry for the audio on this one. I could not use my mic because I had to record in a separate place. So, the quality, some of it's recorded in my car. I worked from 9 a.m. to 11 p.m. today. Two different jobs. So, I had to do it while I could. But it's ending now and it's about 2 o'clock in the morning. So, gonna go to bed, and like I said, next week we'll be back with suspects. And if you watched the previous episode, you know who that suspect's gonna be. It's gonna be Regal Miller, and you don't want to miss it. Until next time, guys, I'm out.